Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors. Hey, health junkies. The Health Fix Podcast is sponsored by EMF Rocks and athleticism.com, where you can find all the tools for whole brain and whole body performance so you can be an athlete for life. Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. And on today's episode, I have Maria Ibrahim. She's an entrepreneur, a fit foodie, celebrity chef, nutrition coach. She has a podcast just like me. And I was on her podcast a couple of weeks ago. It was so much fun. Her podcast is Recipes for Your Best Life. It is fabulous. You got to check that out. And she has a book that I absolutely love, Eat Like You Give a Fork. And today we're going to be talking all about this concept of really, why can't we get folks to cook for themselves? What is it about that? Why is it so hard to cook for yourself? Why is it so hard to eat healthy? And today we're going to dish all about that. So Maria, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thanks so much, Janine. It's so nice to be on with you today.
So what inspired you to be a chef? Because I know, like, I kind of sit around, I'm like, oh, I could be a chef. This could be fun. And then I have a disastrous moment with food and I go, oh, I can't do this. I can't.
Well, you know, my curiosity about cooking started from when I was very, very young. I'm Middle Eastern, come from a family that would be eating breakfast while planning lunch. You know, it was one literally survival mode, it felt like, of one meal to the next, but there was so much joy in the kitchen. And I, you know, have some of my fondest memories ever of growing up, being in the kitchen with my grandma, my aunts, my mom, and, you know, even my grandfather spending time in the kitchen with me and then enjoying the meal together. And I just saw from an early age that connection of what having, you know, your hands in food and being together can do to bring connection. So for me, equally as much about the food as it is about the people that prepare it and enjoy it with you. And I think that's really where it started. But where I took food in my career is a little maybe unconventional than others, because I had a pretty big pivot point when I was in cooking school.
Ah, gotcha. And so what was that pivot point?
Yeah, I was hoping you would ask. You know, going to school in France, you know, I really wanted to learn traditional French technique. And what I found pretty quickly is the food didn't agree with me. You know, I couldn't stomach the heavy sauces and lots of dairy and a lot of sugar and, you know, products that were just very meat centric, at least at that time. I think, you know, the evolution of cooking has really taken us to a new place now where fresh produce is the center point. But back then, that wasn't the case. And so I consequently never felt good after preparing these dishes, as beautiful and elegant as they were, they just left me feeling like I had a rock in my gut. So, you know, coupling technique and understanding how to use a product with my holistic health nutrition coaching, that's really where it all came to fruition for me. And that balance of being able to understand how to feed your body to the core so that you are functioning optimally. And by the way, it's different for everybody. You know, my son is a carnivore, you know, he can drink half a gallon of milk in a day and be fine, but not me. So everybody is different. I think it's really important to find what fits you, but at the same time, understanding that there is a common denominator for everyone. Everyone should be eating a lot of fresh produce, period. And so that's really where my cooking has taken on a different direction. Is it's eat with your eyes, fill your plate with the colors of the rainbow, and then go from there.
I love that. I think, you know, for a lot of people, we think we have to be like gourmet chefs,
in the kitchen. Like we have to like use the heavy stuff and we have to use, you know, the French technique and then lots of sugars. And for most people, you know, your son, I think when folks are younger, they do have a little bit more of leeway of tolerance in the digestive system. I think it's just not been beat up as much. And sure. Then once you start to get into your late 30s and 40s, things are a little bit like, oh, it's like an old car in there. It started to see a little bit more of the beating up and stress, you know, effect on the gut. And I think we definitely do have trouble digesting, you know, certain foods over time. And then there's genetic intricacies too. And one of the things that you mentioned was that, you know, you went all the way to school and then you realized this. And I think a lot of people, you know, think they have to be chefs right off the bat. They have to go to cooking school. And to cook healthy and to cook for your body and your own intuition of what feels good doesn't have to be hard. Your cookbook, I mean, your book totally shows that. And that's, I think, one of the big things I wanted to talk about today, because you have a huge experience with Dr. Amen. So he's a big person here in the Pacific Northwest because of all of his brain work. And then you have Dr. Mark Hyman that you've worked for. I mean, these are big names. And these folks, of course, are in the industry of wanting to help make healthy easy. So what would you say to someone who might be listening right now and be like, oh, that's great, but she's a chef. Of course, she's going to be able to cook healthy. I don't even know the first thing. And you mentioned a little bit about, you know, the plate and what to do. What would be the first thing someone should start thinking about if they wanted to start revamping their kitchen and really dabble in cooking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think one of the most important things to do is to go to your local farmer's market and see what's in season. You know, there is nothing I geek out over more than going to the farmer's market. I think it's a weird thing with me. Like I literally go and I see all the color and I feel like I'm at an amusement park. Like I just get so excited. Also kind of putting my hands on these amazing produce items that have come literally from a seed, from the ground. It is a miracle that they then transform into this sustenance for us. And what we quickly realize is that it's not complicated to pick up a plum and eat it. You know, it's not complicated to take a carrot and wash it and eat it. So the celebration of sustenance and really eating with the seasons is about finding what's local and specific to your region, because the more you eat locally, the fresher it's going to be, the more nutrient dense it's going to be. I mean, we've got food traveling all over the world. And the problem with that is a lot of the nutrient content actually dissipates by the time it gets to us. So if you can eat this way in a more localized manner, and I'm even going to go out on a limb and say it doesn't have to be organic. You know, I think choosing local is going to generally mean that they're going to, you know, be pretty minimal in their use of pesticides and other, you know, chemicals that you would find used in more mass production. But, you know, prioritizing that, you're going to get food that tastes a whole lot better, that's fresher. You're not going to need to cover it up with sauces and heavy anything, you know, and really starting there and stripping down your palate. The first chapter in my book, I really talk about resetting your taste buds, or, you know, reconditioning them, because we get so, we dull them with all of this excessive salt and processed food and sugar, where you should be able to just eat a carrot and literally notice so many different nuances of flavor and a difference between even the colors of food. And so enjoying this simplicity and this abundance in its most natural form is going to give you a chance to really kind of get in touch with all sorts of different things, maybe that you've never been familiar with.
I love that. It covers one of the biggest objections that I hear from folks that, oh, well, healthy food doesn't taste good. It's like, well, wait a minute. One, fresh. And yes, not necessarily having to be organic on that level. Cause yeah, when you go to the farmer's market, you've got smaller, not so mass produced companies who are, you know, maybe they didn't get the organic certification, but they're close enough to it. Maybe they're even better. You don't even, you know, in some cases, I wonder.
It's so true because, you know, the organic certification, I'm not, you know, by all means, I'm not knocking down organic growers. It takes a long time and a lot of expense to usually transition a farm. Yeah. But, you know, the bottom line is a lot of locally grown foods are going to be a little bit more observant because fertilizers and pesticides and things like that are an added expense. So they're going to try and keep things as clean as possible, just even from an expense standpoint. And you know what, the thing that people need to kind of get over is there's always, you either invest in your health now in good health, or you will invest in sickness. And so the choice is yours. And every modern, you know, antibiotic and medication that we have is patterned after something that comes in nature. So if we can really strip that down, like what is an onion and a garlic, but the basis for most antibiotics, right?
Yeah.
What is, you know, a probiotic, but really eating food that's unadulterated, food that's got its enzymes and you're eating the peel, like that is what is in the food. So when you really look at this idea of food being your sustenance and being like your medicine, maybe we just need to rename it and not think of it as medicine, but really it is your vitality cabinet. You know, it's the entry point. And I will tell you, a lot of this came from me being sick, you know, me having my own health issues. I was a super sickly child, always had dairy sensitivity, always like just had a sensitive stomach in general. And a lot of that is just being a sensitive person. I think when you're a highly sensitive person, like food just hits different, right? Yeah. And when I became much more intentional and aware of what I was putting in my body, it just sort of like also gave me control. And I think that is a thing we need to really, really own, is no one else is going to take care of your health like you. Mm-hmm. Not your doctor, not your parents, certainly not your restaurants that you go to. They're more about impressing your palate. And so if you only saw the amount of butter and seasoning that they're using in any given meal, like you would be astounded, even if it's those vegetables that you're eating. So when you learn how to cook and prepare, you take control of that. And I think there is an onus in that. We are responsible. And so the whole nascence of my book, Eat Like You Give a Fork, is about caring and eating with intention, because there's only a few things we need to survive and food is one of them. So we better prioritize it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's funny that you mentioned the backside of the restaurant industry, because I think a lot of people don't really truly, I don't think realize how much heavy cream, how much butter, how much salt and other seasonings truly go into the food to make it taste, you know, those carrots taste gloriously candied, you know, or things of that nature. And it's impressive. And then of course you're going to have a huge change. And like you said, you have to recondition your palate, because you're going to go from something that has a lot of flavor if you're eating out a lot to something that's going to taste different, but fresh is best. And looking at in seasonal foods. So it's fall right now when we're recording this. What is your most favorite fall food? Like,
oh, there's so many. I love fall. Fall is one of my favorite seasons by far. And I love all of the hard squashes, kabocha and delicata and acorn and butternut. Like there is just such an abundance of beautiful color and nutrient content and just possibilities, you know. And what's so interesting, I was just writing about this because I did a stuffed squash on my Instagram. And I'm plant-based now. Hi, Bonzo, my dog. I'm plant-based now, but you know, every once in a while I will eat, you know, something else, but I really try and encourage my family to eat more plant-based with me. And my husband found this dish really, really satisfying because it has mushrooms in it. It's got, roasted sweet potato. It's got lentils, and you season all of that, add some celery, And you stuff the squash and bake it, and it's phenomenal. So, you know, you can have a lot of fun with the textures. You can turn those squashes into soups, and you literally can eat the whole thing, skin and all, even though it seems so hard. By the time you roast it, everything is like broken down and easy to eat. So love winter squashes, love pomegranate. Pomegranates are in season right now. And this takes me back to my childhood. My mom used to love pomegranates. And so just kind of munching on the seeds, they add so much beautiful pop and color and texture. And texture and color are really important. So I think for a lot of people who tend to, you know, want to crunch something or, you know, want to have that texture, it's important to work texture into your foods. Love pomegranate, love persimmon. Persimmon is in season or becoming in season right now. And there's a lot of fun desserts that you can do with persimmon, pudding, and, you know, stewing the persimmons, making, you can make a delicious custard out of it with coconut milk. And there's no dairy in it. It tastes so rich and creamy, and there are so many benefits to coconut. So, you know, just being creative. I went to the farmer's market this past weekend, and there's just so many things that you would also never find in your grocery store. Yeah. You know, lots of different chestnuts and, you know, different kinds of greens that are in season right now, like late, you know, summer, I guess Indian summer for us in Southern California. But, you know, I know I keep coming back to this, but like, ask your local grower, what are you growing right now that's unique? I found these beautiful, gorgeous plums. Wow. I've never seen plums like this. And they're doing pluots and all of these different hybrids in an array of colors. And those are all in season right now. So that's that late season stone fruit. I could go on and on, but I love it all.
Oh my gosh. I mean, squash is my favorite. I actually had no idea that I could eat the skin till a girlfriend of mine who lives in Southern California was like, oh my gosh, the kerbota, I can never say it right. The kerbota.
Kerbota, yeah.
Squash. That one we ate like the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know you could eat the skin. She's like, yeah, girl, you can eat the skin. It's totally fine. It's extra fiber. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, it does make sense. That's why I eat the skin on potatoes. Hello. So it was like mind blowing. And then the same gal was grilling her plums on her grill.
Yes. Grilled stone fruit. I've got a few recipes for that on our website. So simple. You put a scoop of coconut whipped cream or, you know, it just a little drizzle of local honey and some toasted walnuts. One of my favorite desserts ever.
Well, you know what I'm going to be doing after this podcast, right?
but here we are talking about the simplicity. And I think that's the message that I really want people to hear loud and clear. It's not about complicated recipes and complicated approaches. You know, I think once you take the time to find a product, and when I say product, I mean the ingredient that's in season that tastes delicious on its own, there's not a whole lot you need to do with it. And the more you can eat foods raw, the more benefit you're going to get from the enzymes and the pre and probiotics and all of the other, you know, nutrients that end up getting damaged or destroyed when they're cooked. So learn how to eat food in its naked state. And that is part of the taste bud reset that I walk people through. And then you can start to combine and go from there. And I think if we demystify cooking and maybe even just think of it as assembly, you know, putting things together that work together, then maybe we can kind of encourage people to come back to the table in a way that is much, you know, less daunting or, you know, less stressful because they feel like they might ruin it.
Absolutely. Yeah. The ruining it thing. I think I have a lot of patients who watch that like Worst Chef in America show. And I feel like they like embody that show and they're like, that's me. that's totally me. Like, no, wait a minute. Let's back up. What have you tried to make? And then they're telling me that they've tried to make things that I'm like, I wouldn't even try that. Like crazy.
See, and you have to, you have to remember those shows are for purely entertainment and ratings. That's not real life. No one, Bobby Flay is not going to be in the kitchen with you, you know, berating you because you haven't made the sauce properly. Like it's just, it's not that we don't need to put that kind of pressure on ourselves, but what we can do is come back to a place where we really embrace this idea that we have to own it. You know, we are responsible for our own individual well-being and the well-being of the people that we love ultimately, you know? And while we can't force anything on them, we can certainly encourage them and we can keep it abundant. And, you know, my family knows there are certain things that they can enjoy that I won't eat and they don't need to push it on me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if we can just kind of like allow ourselves to keep our own, you know, well-being at the forefront of our decision-making and how we decide to approach food, then there's no stress. You know, nobody's going to come down on me. I'm not going to come down on anybody. I'm just going to set the example. That's it. You know, and I'll tell you, setting the example for my kids as a single mom for 13 years is why my daughter now away at college shows me the salads that she makes. And, you know, mom, I went to the farmer's market and I got this. Look at the stir fry I put together. Like that, those are life skills that you will give to your kids and they will do well with them. I promise you, more than any other life skill you could probably give them is teaching them how to feed themselves.
I love that. And this kind of brings it back to the beginning when you were talking about your whole family around the kitchen. That's how I grew up. I'm Polish by descent. And so we were making pierogies. We were doing all the stuff together. And for me, you know, I relished that time frame because I got to chat with them and they, of course, got to find out about my life as well. And so, you know, I think a lot of us have spent more time at home now, thanks to COVID, but also we need that connection. We need that time with each other. And so for a lot of moms who might be listening to this or grandparents who might be listening to this and thinking, oh, cooking, I don't like it. What about connection? Let's use food as connection.
That thing, I mean, if you think about like all of your fondest memories, you know, I mean, Thanksgiving is, yes, it's about the food, but you can only eat so much food in one sitting. Like, isn't it about getting together with family maybe you haven't seen in a while, or, you know, having pride in something that you put together because you're excited people are going to be coming over or you're going to visit them. Like, you know, when we really strip back, and I'm definitely, this is part of my message and part of my mission, is to really help people kind of come back to the table and embrace what is really important. And the legacy that you're going to leave with the people around you is going to hopefully be one of nurturing and love. And I don't know what other language you could speak that really engages all the senses. Every sense that you have, all five senses are engaged when you eat and cook. And there's no other art form that does that, you know? So it really, it's the ultimate expression of creativity too. Oh, and I think every part of our humanity wants to be creative. You know, we were kind of born to be creative. So it really satiates that. And I talk to a lot of people. I teach, you know, I've taught a lot of cooking classes over the years and, you know, spoken at events and stuff. And the one thing that people tell me that they really do appreciate about being in the kitchen is that it gives them time to just kind of be, just to be creative. And we, as adults, we get so like discouraged almost to be creative. It's like nonsense. But when we were kids, creativity was everything. Like, it can literally awaken a childlike side of you, I think, that if you allow it to, without it feeling like a chore.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's incredibly de-stressing. I personally think I enjoy Sundays. That's my day where I do a lot of my meal prep. And I look forward to just literally cooking all morning. And, you know, I'm not talking like the whole thing. It's not like a huge production for those of you guys thinking like, oh my God, I don't have that much time. I mean, I'm literally like 2 hours, two and a half.
And yeah. And meal prep is so wonderful. It's a big part of my book. And also our products, we have a product line called Eat Cleaner. And you can use our fruit and vegetable wash to cleanse all your fresh produce when you bring it home. And it helps to remove over 99% of the residue that water can't, and it helps it last up to five times longer. So the great thing is you can get it all washed and cut up and literally set up your refrigerator like a salad bar. You know, you've got your kale, your leafy greens washed, you've got your berries, maybe you've got your, you know, carrots, your squash, whatever, everything is kind of pre-done. So then it's just assembly, you know, putting things together, combining them, maybe throwing, if I guarantee you, if your produce is washed and prepped already, your chances of eating it are incredibly increased. And instead of it like literally disintegrating in your crisper, it's in your pan or it's in your salad because you've taken that 5 minutes to get it pre-prepped. And I love that you do that on a Sunday. Pick a day for your prep. It can literally be just 20 minutes to get your produce washed. And that is a huge step towards the rest of the week.
Absolutely. And get your kids involved if you have them. Because
yes,
now it goes faster.
This needs to be like essential. Like I remember my son, he was maybe two, maybe one and a half even. And I would set him down. He would love to be in the kitchen with me. I'd set him down with a bowl and a little wooden spoon. And those were his favorite toys, mm-hmm. you know, and just being in there with you from the time that they can sit up to when they can start, you know, maybe they're standing next to you on a little step stool and they're pressing the button on the blender or they're whisking something or, you know, get them washing the produce, get them mixing, you know, put a fork in something, like just make them part of the process. It may seem distracting. There were these videos that went viral during COVID of this little boy. He was cooking with his grandma and he would like in the blink of an eye, like shove a handful of flour into his mouth. Like it was the funniest thing I've ever seen, but he was so exuberant about cooking. And I think he's three, but anyway, it's just so cute. And I've worked with a lot of kids with autism. They love cooking. It is such a beautiful thing because they're very focused on one task. And so even kids with special needs, you know, you can really feed their intellect and their creativity by giving them these little focused tasks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's huge. And I think that's great to have someone else besides me say that out loud, because I'm always like, bring everybody in the kitchen. That should be like your forget the living room, everybody in the kitchen. In my house, it's the kitchen. If you're not hanging out in the kitchen, I don't know what to tell you, but I think it's really
missing out on all the fun. If you're not in there, we got music, we got the conversations going, we got like just fun stuff. And you know, I'll tell you who's always in the kitchen with me is Garbanzo, my dog.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He loves hanging out in that kitchen. He like sits there and smells and watches me. And it's really funny. He's very curious about cooking.
They are. Isn't that funny? I know both of my dogs too. Same thing. As soon as I start cooking, they're like on the periphery of the kitchen, just like, all right, what are we getting?
What's going to drop now?
Exactly. Like, what little morsels are you going to drop? They're like waiting for something to fall.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the best watching them. I love that. I love that. So you've had the pleasure of being a celebrity chef from, like I mentioned, some serious big name folks, from Daniel Amen to Mark Hyman. What did you glean from that? And what did you enjoy about working with them? And kind of what kind of information can you share for folks about their specific, those projects? And you know, I'm just-
Yeah, getting, well, working with them specifically, just, you know, kind of to kind of bring it full circle, we developed a program called the Daniel Plan. Mm-hmm. And the Daniel Plan was born out of Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California, with Rick Warren, the best-selling author, I think, of all time. And, you know, it sprang from the need of the church to create a program that incorporated more than just weight loss, because he noticed after baptizing literally hundreds of people that most of his congregation was overweight, and so was he. And he, you know, really wanted to do something about it for his health and the well-being of others. So that's where he brought in Dr. Mark Hyman, Dr. Daniel Amen, Dr. Oz was involved. There was an exercise component there. And then he brought in chefs like myself to, you know, really kind of put the program into a format that would be user-friendly. So it's faith focus, friends and family, fitness, and food. Those are the five pillars of the program. And what we found is it really, having those five pillars gives meaning to why you would want to do this. Because ultimately, if you're taking somebody who's very overweight or has eaten a certain way their whole lives and tell them now it's time to change, you're going to have to tell them why. Yeah. You know, what's the reason? Like, it's either going to come from their own health scare or someone in their family that is urging them that they care about, or perhaps it's because they want to serve more and they don't have the energy to do that. I mean, there needs to be a motivating why. And then having the community around you, having the focus and the faith and, you know, the fitness aspect, of course, you know, that all rounds out the program. So, you know, we'd hold a rally every year around January to get people on board. And then, you know, we do different classes throughout the year and, you know, even travel around the country and the world. I spoke at the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Hyman's home base. And, you know, we addressed a big group of worship leaders that were coming in and wanted to introduce the Daniel Plan. But the common denominator is the show and tell. You know, it's how do you do this? Give me the basics. Give me the starter plan, basically, and then show me just some simple things to help me through that. So that's what we did. We would show people how to get some simple meal prep done. We'd show them how to do smart swaps. You know, instead of the heavy cream, can you do pureed vegetables instead? Can you do a probiotic rich yogurt? Can you do, you know, instead of the heavy meat, let me show you how to cook with plant-based proteins, combining beans with grains and things like that. We would give them a 10-day reset diet and meal plan so that, although I don't like to use the word diet, but just a meal plan for how to get going. And, you know, I think that's really where we were able to weave all of the doctor's input, because Dr. Hyman, you know, as a practitioner of more of a holistic approach to healing, Dr. Amen with the brain health, certainly brain health focuses so much on nutrition and food and focus. Like all of that kind of wraps up together when you show the application of the food. And that's really how we got to work together. And I, you know, I'm very privileged to have had that opportunity. I still serve for the Daniel Plan. In fact, we have a live cooking event coming up in November. And I think this is a universal truth that everybody, doesn't matter, not the United States alone, but everybody is suffering from the invasion of fast food. You know, working more, trying to make more money, trying to do bigger things, and then losing sight of the simple things that matter most. And so as we pursue more and more and more, we lose more and more of ourselves. And so can we simplify some things? Can we come back to the table where conversation happens, where community happens, where connection and prosperity happens, but more in your soul versus just externally? you know? And I think what COVID did was it shut us down for a while. It made us sit down and really evaluate what's important. And we went on. We went on without going to fancy parties, and we went on without going to expensive, you know, places and all of the things, the connection to the things that we think are important, and got us back into the kitchen. I mean, at no point did, you know, I see more people interested in our products, interested in our program, interested in learning more recipes than I did during COVID.
Absolutely.
And it still continues, you know, because it's required for our well-being. And I think I personally, yeah, you can beat yourself up in your early years, but as if you're going to age, and aging is a privilege, you got to age for longevity, and quality of life is really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we, of course, want to keep this going, this momentum of people actually getting back in the kitchen, taking time to connect and try new recipes, things of that nature. And I think another point that you didn't directly make, but I'm going to make it, I think that you're on the pathway of going that route, is, you know, food is so much more than weight loss plans. And it's so much more than that. And I want people to really think about eating healthy as your longevity. This is your key to resilience. This is your key to longevity. This is what's going to get you much further than all of the diet plans and ketos and blah, 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 blah.
Well, I'll tell you what ends up happening is, you know, we are a nation of, you know, I think the number now is 1 in 3 is considered clinically obese. You know, here's the deal. You can be obese and still be malnourished. Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of wrap your head around that. Like, yeah, your weight does not indicate your nourishment or your ability to feed your cells, really strip down to that. And on the flip side, you know, I had an eating disorder in my early years, and I was very, very thin, and I was extremely malnourished. Now, you could see that malnourishment, but it's still evident in people who are heavy. So, you know, I think when we try and judge, or we try and achieve something based on a physical look or appearance, that's where we get in trouble. I mean, there's this whole syndrome called skinny fat, where people are thin, but their organs are literally encased in saturated fat. And they are, that's why heart disease for women has become the number one killer. Number one is heart disease. And so I've worked with the American, and I still work with the American Heart Association. And a lot of what we try and do is make women aware of these choices, because it's not only your food, but it's your stress level. It's your sleep. It's how you deal with emotions, you know, and we are sensitive beings, a lot of the time more sensitive than our male counterparts. So how do we balance all of that? And, you know, if I can hit the pause button and retreat to the kitchen and know I'm putting together a nourishing meal in 10 minutes, like, I'm the queen of quick meals, then I'm doing myself a service. And we have to prioritize our, you know, just ourselves and our well-being in this journey. It's definitely not just about the external at all. It may be the least amount about the external.
The older I get, the more I start to realize it's more the internal journey and where we're headed and mindset and things of that nature versus the outward appearance and physicality things.
I mean, well, you and I talked when I interviewed you too about hormones, mm-hmm. right? And I think, you know, what many people don't realize too is your ever evolving need to regulate your hormones is often dictated by food. So, you know, I've been definitely, I think, kind of going through some transition. And I have found that certain foods help me significantly. Like, if I eat sweet potatoes regularly, it makes a big difference. You know, if I eat more plant-based and less saturated fat, I feel better. I haven't had hot flashes. I haven't had like some of the, you know, syndromes people are talking about, but I'm super diligent about eating the right foods, taking my fish oil, taking, you know, and that to me is where I really visually see it, because I know I'm going through something, you know, and we go through hormone changes at so many different phases in our lives, right? So if I can physically feel a difference, mentally feel a difference, because I'm tweaking what I'm eating to serve that better, like that to me is applied food knowledge.
That's huge. That's huge. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of people divert quickly to the bioidentical hormones, divert quickly to thinking they need herbs. And truly, it's going back to metabolic reset with the food. I do a metabolic reset program, and it's really funny because a lot of ladies are like, oh, okay, I'm going to lose weight. This is a weight loss thing. I'm like,
yeah.
No, we're working on how to eat to help to reset your hormones over time. And then now this is a process and we keep doing it. It's not just this, you know, 8-week challenge or 21-day reset. It's a lifelong thing. It's maintenance.
But you know, here's the thing, Janine, and I believe this with my whole heart, and I know a lot of our followers have said this to me, is once they go this route, they don't ever want to go back, because it just feels too good. You know, it's kind of like that thing where, you know, sometimes you want to fly, but you just can't imagine leaving the ground. But once you do, you're like, wow, I really like flying. This is awesome. And that's, I believe, what happens when you make this shift, when you embrace an intentionality and an ownership in your health, is it's not just about the physicality. I mean, certainly you will feel better when you look better. And I don't know anybody that doesn't look better. I mean, your skin glows, you hydrate better. Like, it does make a difference externally. But what you really want to quantify is the feeling when you wake up in the morning and you feel energized, and you feel like you want to go and accomplish your goals, and you feel like your stomach is okay. You know, like those are the things to me that really weighed me down, that prevented me from achieving what I wanted to achieve as an entrepreneur, you know, as a human being, as a mom. Mm-hmm. And when I dialed all of that in, I had more energy. I had more of a positive outlook on life, not Pollyanna, but like just positive, you know, that I could see the glass half full. I started treating people better, you know, my memory and my focus and just the ability to complete tasks changed. I mean, I was a girl that was having panic attacks, you know, I couldn't have relationships with people. I like, it impacts you on such a bigger level than just your weight. Like, this is what I call being a good human being. And I can't imagine ever wanting to go back to that. For what? To be sickly and underweight and miserable? Like, yeah. That's not a trade-off. It really isn't.
No, not at all. Not at all. And definitely this is something that, of course, this is why I keep going on this, because anytime I've diverted and, you know, you go on vacation, you have your treats and then you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm so bloated.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't feel good. I got a headache. I feel gross and I'm grumpy. I don't want to feel like that. So of course I divert back to this. And so I think it's just a matter of trying and working with it slowly, adopting it. And you guys will see the changes. It's one step at a time.
Yeah. And one thing I know that you didn't ask me about this, but I'm just going to say it, because I think that, you know, also with COVID, a big coping mechanism that people diverted to was alcohol.
Yeah.
I think we have to be really careful about our alcohol consumption, because you can eat clean. I know a lot of people that do, they eat really well and they exercise and they take care of themselves, but they drink excessively. Mm-hmm. And we are completely undoing everything that we thought we were doing that was positive by drinking too much. We have a culture that embraces alcohol really freely. And I just, you know, I would like for your listeners to just be aware. You know, this isn't a scolding by any means or a hand slap. It's just be aware, because a little bit's okay, but a little more is not, you know? So there is a fine line between what is okay and, you know, going to work for you and what is then going to maybe sabotage your efforts and even sabotage your relationships. So, you know, just being aware of that, I think we glamorize alcohol too much as a culture.
Oh yeah. When the wine industry and you see a winery popping up on every corner, like it's incredible. It's one of the common denominators that I find when I do not get results with patients is that they've been drinking maybe even one drink. Now here's the thing. Wine glasses are what? I swear they're like 6 inches tall. And people will fill the whole thing. And that's like 2-3 drinks, depending. Sometimes it's like half of a bottle in one of those.
Yeah, we're talking like 3 ounces, mm-hmm. 3 to 4, maybe, like shouldn't be more than that. Certainly for a woman, and for a man, maybe a little bit more, but yeah, we have to watch our pore size. You know, and certainly like, it doesn't have to be every day, you know, I just, you know, again, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here, but I do think that is the one thing that can derail people pretty significantly is alcohol and embracing this culture of like, I'll just drink my problems away or I'll just have another drink. Like we have to really check ourselves there. And you know, what can the default be? Well, the default can be pour a glass of kombucha into a wine glass. It's sparkling. It's, you know, something that will help you feel better, still might feel a little festive. That can be your alternative. Or, you know, I make these great mocktails with just a little, you know, pomegranate juice, little sparkling water, squeeze of lime. Like that can be just as satisfying as alcohol. And I drink wine. I just don't drink it every day. And when I do, I literally drink like 2 to 3 ounces and that's it. So, you know, can you just limit yourself? And, you know, just like we fill a plate, you know, plates can be this big, like a 10-inch dinner plate, or it can be, you know, a smaller bowl size. Like, let's kind of just get back in touch with what that portion size looks like.
Mm-hmm. Awareness. I think awareness is really key here and something that shouldn't be overlooked when it comes to your total health, but also when it comes to what's going on in the kitchen, what's going in your mouth, and, you know, whether it's liquid or food-based. And, you know, you can't go wrong when you start to pay attention to your patterns and how you feel and how things make you feel.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. If you're waking up feeling a little groggy every day, you know, you might want to just check what you had the day before. My grandfather, bless his soul, was just kind of the consummate foodie. You know, he really is the one I would credit with getting me the most excited about cooking because of the way he would talk about it and the way he would serve it and prepare it and source it. And he would drink his little bit of wine out of, it looked like a thimble. It was like maybe a demitasse cup, like the ones you would drink espresso out of, you know, and that was it. That was his wine cup. And he'd be like, that's enough. I don't need more.
How cute. How cute. Yeah. Oh, see, we just have to take a little bit from the grandparents there on how to limit and plus how to taste the flavors. You know, I think a lot of people, it's like wine tastes like wine, get drunk. But there is that whole concept, same like we were starting in the beginning, talking about, you know, checking that palate and really getting to taste the flavors of the wine. Which,
oh gosh, you know, I always say like quality versus quantity, you know, and take the time. Like we are always in such a dang hurry to get through things, right? Because it's like on to the next, on to the next, on to the next. When I was studying in Italy, and one of the I had met like a group of, you know, people our age, and they were like, you know, Americans, they don't appreciate to sit and eat. We eat, we sit, we talk, we laugh, we make jokes, you know, and they were just so caught up on like how in a hurry we always are. And just like enjoying anything, like, don't you want to savor it? I remember I saw Oprah speak once, and I remember her saying, you know, it's like when you get that really good thing and all you want to do is share it with somebody because you want to be able to say, ooh, girl, wasn't that good? And she'd be like, yeah, girl, that was amazing. Like, we need to come back to that. Ooh, girl, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There is something about that, the serotonin that we get high off of when we enjoy something and we get to share it with someone else. You know, it's just, it's double the fun. It's double the pleasure. It really is. Like, I love when I get to feed my husband something and he's like, oh, that was good. I'm like, yeah, wasn't that good? You know, or my son or my daughter, like, it's just, it's so much better than doing it alone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree. I would agree. Connection over food, share the moment, slow down. We all need the parasympathetic activity that goes along with eating. And oh, we just need that. We need more of that. So I think that is a great wrapping up on this podcast. Now I want folks to be able to get a hold of your book, you know, Eat Like You Get a Give a Fork, not Get a Fork. Eat Like You Give a Fork, folks, not eat like you
get a fork too.
Get a fork with the book. There you go. We're throwing it in today, just today. And of course we want everyone to check out your podcast and then get a hold of your Eat Cleaner products. So where can folks find you? How can they get a hold of that? How can they listen to the podcast? Give us all the details.
Yeah. The best place to go is eatcleaner.com. Just eatcleaner.com. That's where you'll find the book, our products, a link to the podcast, and a lot of other resources. We have all kinds of free programs, like a 5-day reset. We have a hormone, a helpful hormone primer on what foods and supplements to take that can help you, that have helped me along my journey. We have, right now we have an 8 great pumpkin recipe free download. Ooh. That's got lovely recipes featuring pumpkin, and the hard squashes that I mentioned, and all types of other free recipes and fun food for thought on eatcleaner.com, and, always posting on Instagram at, eatcleaner and Chef Maria, and the same with Facebook.
Awesome. We definitely need to go find that recipe for the stuffed squash that you
Yeah, made. That's on Instagram.
I'm going right over there because my dad, we just harvested so many acorn squashes. I'm like,
ooh.
I'm on it. I'm on it.
Love it.
Probably right after this to go find that on your Instagram. We're gonna put it on there. So folks, I'll put that on the group, the notes here for the Health Fix podcast at Dr. Jeanine Krause. com. Gosh, I don't even know my own website. Geez, I might need some food. So Dr. J. Krause.
You're hungry now. That's why.
I'm so hungry. That's what's happening. I'm like, oh my God. Now I'm thinking like pomegranates. It's happening.
Get a hold of that seasonal stuff. There's so much good seed. Pears are in season right now. Apples. This is real apple seed. I know we get apples all year round, but those are storage apples. Apples are in season right now. Go pick some apples.
Oh my God.
They will taste like nothing you've ever had before.
So everybody, this is your mission right now. Go to your farmer's market or go to your local, like if you've got a farm but nearby, or you've got even an orchard nearby, that is what you need to do after this podcast. Go do that.
Seriously.
And you will be one step closer to getting on that boat to healthy and feeling so much better for life. Maria, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me today.
Thanks, Jeanine. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for all you do too.
Aw, well, you as well. And I look forward to chatting with you more as time goes on, because I think we have a lot we can geek out about. Like maybe we need a seasonal one so that we can get folks ready for each season.
Yeah. Well, let's make stuffed squash together or something. We can cook together.
Oh my God. Dawn, we're doing
Yes, it. Let's do it. All okay. Right.
Deal.
It's a date.
Deal. Hey there, if you enjoyed this episode of The Health Fix, I bet you'd love to join us in our Facebook group, Find Your Health Fix, where we keep the conversation going from the podcast, but also talk all things health and how we can be athletes and healthy for